This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, January 31st, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host today as we continue the conversation about tourism, right? And mind you, I have my newspaper, and I put it down in my bag, and I didn't take it out, but I'm not sure if you saw The Guardian today. If you haven't, you need to go out there and purchase it. The Nassau Guardian has the Minister of Tourism. That's not it. And bear with me for a minute, because I sure I put it in my bag. And he is heralding the Bahamas because we have reached, again, 2019 pre-pandemic numbers, right? Says the headline says, tourist arrival is back to the 7 million person mark. Said cruise ship arrival increases by nearly 400%. You know, and I know that my listening audience have been hearing me rant and rave, particularly every Tuesday, especially when about tourism and what is happening downtown or what is not happening downtown. Of course, you know, I belabored the speech or the utterance of Mike Moore, and people say, "You still vexed at that?" I say, "Yeah, a little concerned," because Mike Moore, he's in charge of the port development, and I say he's a partner of downtown redevelopment, and I was a little concerned, mind you. I understand his need to admonish our tourism product, right, and say we need to do better. But I said, man, you're a little too heavy-handed on us. You're a little too heavy-handed on us, particularly as a partner, because I understand that you're trying to motivate us, but it might give us an inferiority complex. But today I have two guests, right? I have Catherine, as usual, who's my guest host today. We're going to be talking about the future of downtown and the development of downtown and ideas of what downtown should look like. And of course, I have
Travis Miller,
who's with me, who is like a SBDC, small business specialist, you know, entrepreneur type there and concept and ideas and idea man of what can be done for businesses in general. And I say, yeah, Catherine, bring him along because I'm going to talk about business, how downtown Bay Street should look like, what tourism should look like. And of course, I want to listen to the audience to call in and tell me how do they see downtown as, you know, there are people who are willing to fashion downtown for us and not with us, right? To fashion for how they can enjoy it and not necessarily invite us to enjoy it. We'll be spectators and not persons who are benefiting from the tourism product. And that's what I'm concerned with. And this is why all the rant is all about that, right? So without further ado, of course, I'm going to welcome Catherine and Travis, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the theme today is I want to know your ideas. I want to know your ideas on what downtown should look like and what, by extension, what is hindering that concept. So we'll start with you, Catherine, and then we'll go straight to Travis, and then I'm just monitoring this conversation and find out what is happening.
Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here with my friend Travis Miller. He's a young man, but we're old friends in that we've worked together over various projects, festivals, idea dumps, vendor training, micro business trainings for years now. He's one of the heart members of Rum Bahamas that our good friend Erin was an integral part of there with her rum fingers, etc. We can't do that kind of product placement on the air. But Travis is always inspiring and intriguing to me because he's one of the young Bahamians that developed the technical side of his skill set that has abundant ideas, enthusiasm, interest, passion, and could have easily positioned himself anywhere on the globe to be successful. But he chose to come back here, and he has over his years here, developed businesses that he's interested in, but really created a platform to invite young Bahamians with literal pitches, right? Literal pitches to come forward and say, these are our ideas. This is how we'd like to see our nation grow, develop. This is how we find a foothold in this economy that sometimes seems like it's impenetrable. Like that whoever, like what the great giants are, like all of the stores on Bay Street that seem like there's no room for us to elbow in. It's like, how do our ideas, how do our young people, how do these baby businesses find a foothold in here so that we can partake? I mean, Tia, you were saying earlier, like, is this for us or is this by us? Like, who is the Bay Street product for? And I think we always have to remember as we talk about Bay Street, it is, it might be the jewel, it should be the jewel in our crown of product that we offer to the tourists coming off the cruise ships, especially because that's where they go. But how do we partake in it? How do we enjoy it? How do we access it? These are the ideas that we're here to talk about. So, Travis, you want to...
And I want to ask Travis, and forgive me, because you inspired me to ask another question for Travis, right? And I appreciate... appreciate the reminder that Travis does pitches. Like, mm-hmm. That's part of his
business.
That's
his thing.
That's his business, right? Travis, I want to ask you, how important is Bay Street to the psyche of all of New Providence, then by extension the Bahamas? How important is Bay Street? I don't necessarily think that people appreciate that the idea of that Bay Street looks the way it looks,
right,
impacts us. And in terms of the Bahamian psyche and how we see ourselves. So I want you to basically explain that. And then I want you to throw some pitches that to me on what the possibilities of Bay Street can be.
Easy, right, Travis? You're welcome. I told Travis I'm going to do what you do to me and treat him like an expert witness.
Where do I say? I mean, I think to start at the surface level of your question is that when I think of downtown, I think of it as a like the crown jewel. Like when you think of any area that you go, you think
Which
of the city.
Should be.
Yeah, it should be, right? Like you think, okay, where is the hot spot where all the activity and stuff happens? And if you go, if anybody are travelers, they go to Texas or they go to San Francisco, it is an ecosystem of people just acting and interacting with each other, right? Unfortunately, downtown has become synonymous with only a tourist, like the spot for tourists, a tourist destination and stuff like that, where it really doesn't have a lot of the locals in the conversation.
And I'll stop you there.
Yeah.
And forgive me for stopping you there, because you, again, changed the conversation. Mm. You were saying that downtown had a dual purpose. It was not always just tourist-oriented, right, but it had a place for Bahamians. I don't remember that. And I need you to explain that so my listening audience can say, okay, I see what you're saying,
yeah,
and then I see your vision. What you mean that it had a dual purpose?
Yeah, well, I'll lean on you guys more from a historical perspective, but just even from a little bit of knowledge and what I've learned about downtown. I think years ago, I think downtown was a place where people lived and shopped, and then Palmdale became like the center area where people began shopping, right? So I think that took a lot of that traffic into Palmdale.
Well, I mean, and historically, I mean, anyone, it doesn't have, you don't have to be old and wizened like us two, but anyone that can look on Facebook and sees the old pictures that come up, it was a real trading hub. I mean, they had the sponge
right,
docks.
Like a port, like a real
Greeks.
Port.
It was a real port. They had businesses that Bahamians would frequent. You'd go to, and some of the old stores, the linen shop, I think, closed last year. That was one of the older stores there. Was it Baker's and Son? You know, where everyone goes to buy the baptism outfits for their children. But there are real stores that normal people would have a chance to engage and exchange commerce in, and by necessity, by placement, by just it's by locale, it has had become what it has needed to be, which is what it should be, is our main street. I said the center.
Exactly. No, that's what that's what I was going at.
It should be the main street and have the heart of a main street that, as you step onto it, you. Hypothetically should feel like you're in the heart of the Bahamas.
Correct.
That you're experiencing an authentic Bahamian experience, and everyone's like, you know, it doesn't really feel like that. It feels like it's something that, you know, is made in China.
Yeah.
That is, as has a large foreign contingent controlling it and mining the wealth of our tourism population there without us necessarily having an opportunity to benefit ourselves. Sorry, go ahead.
So you're saying that Bay Street has changed?
I mean, yes.
I mean, from my perspective, it's always been like that. Like, you mean from, you know, I'm 33, 34. I know that isn't too young, but still from as early as I can remember, I never really used to go downtown and interact unless it was a special occasion. And on top of it just having those special occasions, just the access to downtown is difficult as well, too. Right before we hopped on the show, we talked about like parking and walking and how difficult that is just to have access.
The impossibility of accessing it easily. But I would love, if anyone wants to call in and say memories of Bay Street, like pre-independence Bay Street, like back in the day, what looked like, what it was used for, what experiences were there? Did you go downtown without purpose? I think now, if, unless you're one of the bank or business workers that has business downtown, you do everything you can to avoid that drag. And there's nowhere that you're going to just pop into a store and necessarily do a quick errand there because there's an impossibility.
Oh, no, you can't do errands downtown.
Have either of you driven past the Newport development lately and seen it? Like looked in on it?
Not recently.
The concert facilities and basically a little bit of a town it's going to be, because this is something that's about to have a dramatic impact on downtown.
Let's pause there and analyze that. You mentioned the port. And I was trying to avoid the port in the conversation.
It can't be avoided in the impact it's going to have on
and
the downtown.
This is why
area.
I say let's analyze it, right? So you mentioned the port, right? Mm-hmm. And Travis was talking about interactive Bay Street where Bohemians come and have things to do and saying that no longer exists. Mm. And then Catherine mentions the port and said the port has all these activities. Mm. And I want to bait Catherine, right, to say what will be the draw for persons like me who is terrified that my car getting broken into, right? Mm. And to come to a Bay Street proper and say I'm going to a port, to the port, to experience something. What would be the draw there to help me risk my car?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's experiences, right? So here's the thing about tourism again, too. When we think tourism, at least in my mind, when you think tourism, you think of external entities, like people from different countries coming here. But when I travel and go anywhere, when I play tourist, it isn't an isolated experience. It isn't like, all these travelers come into the United States, you just go in this one area. No, you interact with everybody, whether you're tourist or local. That could be in Miami, that could be in San Francisco, that could be in Texas. We don't have that interaction with our tourists, and it's disjointed, it's disconnected. Like, you have tourists coming on a boat, they sign up for an event or activity that they do for 5 to 6 hours, and they're usually locked in that area, in that location. Overpaying, you could argue if it's overpaying or not for the experience, and then they go back on the boat. Whereas, let's say, for example, if you have a friend who is from out of town or who wants to play tourist, and they connect with the local, you could stop to 5, 6 places where you could really have an experience, not get caught in tourist traps, where you have to overpay for particular things, and they could really enjoy that experience, not only as a unique experience in the Bahamas, but a unique experience with each other. For those memories to grow, for you to want to always know that you always could come back here.
You know what you say, tourist trap, right, Catherine?
But one of the things I want to say is when we talk about straight Bay Street, people are like, why are we focusing on Bay Street? We have the whole Bahamas. We have the whole 700 islands to be worrying about here. And the reason is that, again, when we look at a thesis statement of a country, of a title page, you could come up with, you're the pitch master, come up with a better statement for that. should and could Bay Street show us an identity as who we are as a people? Or has it become like Disneyland that any Floridian will say, that's not Florida, you went to Disneyland? Right. So are people saying, you're not going to the Bahamas, you're going to Bay Street.
Right.
Or people would say, you know, and this is not an insult or of any way, but you're not necessarily, if you go to Atlanta, not necessarily you're having a Bahamian experience, you're having a resort experience in the Bahamas. And so has our identity be lost there, and is there a need for an interactive experience? Is the cruise port being built for us to have an interactive experience there?
Right.
I just got a text in saying, do you remember Gumbe Festival on Bay Street? Did you ever go to Gumbe when you were little?
Yes.
My aunt used to live taking us to Gumbe.
They brought it back and put it to the beach, and I'm not sure if Bahamians are interested in that anymore.
Well, when it comes to interactive downtown experiences, that was a child memory. You go down there, you get conch fritters, you get your Gumbe soda, and that would be something that you travel downtown to do. I remember one of the shows we talked about this before, my Dominican sister-in-law saying that downtown in the DR, they will literally shut down the street after a certain time of night and do Zumba classes and do make it a real pedestrian.
Get use out of the space.
A pedestrian culture, which might, again, with space is not necessarily possible. But why we're focused, rather, I mean, there's been conversations again about, okay, let's take the focus off of Bay Street. That that's a that's a one war. Let's take it over the hill and to our villages and, again, to the other places that can be developed. This is not taking away from that. I absolutely think that off-the-beaten-track tourism is something that we must develop. And people say, well, is that what they want? Do they want the 3-for-10 ticket tourists? I think we need to tell people what they want. One of the things when we engaged in festival culture, and I know Aaron's passionate about this, is that we said, I think the call is for tourists to be interacting with the local culture, to be having an authentic experience. We need regenerative tourism so that we can have something that sustainably is made possible within our Bahamaland. How we do that in their space, I have some ideas, but go ahead.
And that's what I'm going to say now. Yeah. You've been saying this for a while.
Yeah.
People have been saying this for decades. This is not new. But it's not happening.
Mm.
So, and I for personally, get frustrated when you say things again and again. And say, man, didn't you say that last time?
Yeah.
It didn't work, right? Don't bring it up no more, please.
Right.
And this just cut you
which
off.
Which is
don't,
mad.
Just don't bring it up no more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is where we brought in Travis to do pitches, right? Pitch me something that can help Bay Street become to what you say that's interactive thing. Because I know that you used the word tourist trap earlier.
Yeah.
And I was going to bait Catherine in terms of, is the port, the new port, a tourist trap, right? Where after 6 p.m. when the last ship leaves, it shuts down.
Right.
Is that going to be the port, right? Is it going to be geared to, I mean, they say, oh, all kind of Bahamian business is going to be in the port, right?
Right.
But is it geared to entertain Bahamians?
No, I don't think so. So, I mean, I hopefully it does. And if you are hearing this, whoever is in charge, please take note. Because again, what they're doing with the port, it could easily be another Atlantis or a Bahama where
that's what I said.
The experiences are designed to be in one area. But to answer your question in terms of what makes downtown interactive, it isn't a new idea. But like, if you've ever been to Miami and you've been to Wynwood, is that familiar to UCA? What Wynwood is?
No,
it's like an art district thing that, and
is this like Bayside?
Maybe. I don't know. Is Bayside arty?
Bayside was on downtown proper, flag the street, and they had a collection of jewelry stores, not jewelry stores, like trinket stores, and a lot of musicians, outside things. Yeah. So you go to the eats and drink, and I had my Bayside was fun when I was younger.
Yeah.
This is where all the Cardinals students went to on a Saturday.
Yeah, but that's the point, and that's the key that I'm getting in terms of, like, it's a place that you feel like you could hang. Wynwood, I only been once, but it's an experience where they have, like, a lot of art pop-ups and installations, but they have food, and then they just have a wide range of experiences that if I start at this particular spot, I could walk 2 or 3 doors down and still get a continued experience, and that could probably take up my whole, like, evening. I don't even want to get to, and we'll talk about this at some point, too, in terms of, like, daytime Bay Street versus nighttime Bay Street. That's a whole different conversation in terms of actually having activity at night, because we don't have a lot of that. But I think it's possible, and I think it's possible everywhere down from after you pass Rawson Square all the way down to like the old Luciano's, which is Crypto Isle now. Like, that whole area could just be a walk-in area where people could explore different things. They already have a brewery there, Riptide, at the end of that. Bahama Bistro, which has like a wide variety of like different foods and activities. Even if you take things extended on the next side of downtown.
It's coming.
Yeah, like Creative Nassau. They do their pop-ups like every 2 weeks, I believe in Pompey Square. Stuff that they've been doing at Hillside House, where they have like mixology classes, and they just have salsa, and they have salsa if they want to. I love to see like a Via Cafe or something like that come back up. But these experiences where like, okay, you have, the reality is there is not one type of individual. There are a broad variety of individuals, but they work together. You might be dating somebody with different interests, but you could still get those two different interests in a block experience where all two, you could have a good time, and then you could bring friends out there and activities. When you do have food festivals like we had at, I forget the name of the house, where the museum.
National Museum, Collins House.
Yeah, where they have Food Fest there the other day. You could have more events happening there because you have an ecosystem of people always moving in that same area, but it's such a disconnect, and it only happens so frequently that nobody feels... downtown doesn't pop on top of mind of a thing to do when they want to go, when people want to go out and they want to do things.
But at some point you were hosting pitch nights down there. Was there ever, in your recent history, don't want to talk ancient history, do you remember there ever being a solid nightlife downtown?
Yes, like right before the pandemic, like that whole
2019.
And I find that odd, you know,
right before the pandemic.
I would have said downtown was closed during 2019. No. So clearly there's a nightlife happening that I wasn't aware of circa 2019. Because then again, I work overnight, and I drive straight past, and I don't do the clubs, so I definitely won't stop to go to a club, right? And even though I'm pro culture, right? I would have needed something cultural to draw me downtown,
right? And I would
what
say
be,
that
it would have been cultural downtown.
It wouldn't have been, let's say, nothing like from what we think about traditional culture, not necessarily, but like from a learning about new artists and bands and musicians coming out of the woodwork, like Chiro the Fox, or you know the Sherwood Ramming, all these new cat Judah the Lion. They had like you get to learn about Bahamian artists who also have a story to tell in a Bahamian context within that nightlife.
And so like open mic nights, open mic nights,
poetry.
Yeah.
And this happened downtown.
When Biggity used to be open, they used to have open mic nights and poetry nights upstairs as well too. And then that turned into a skate shop, and I think that recently like shut down because again, that's a whole another thing about rent and you know just being able to survive as a business downtown is a whole different conversation. But there were a lot of different things. The pub, I'm a big karaoke person. Wednesdays, you will find me on the mic for karaoke.
And I feel like somewhere else had Crazy Johnny's. Maybe.
And Crazy Johnny's, which is like towards the tail end of East Bay Street as well.
But a place that always begs for life and things to happen. But Travis, do you think we need this on Bay Street? Is this necessary, or do we just step away and say, "Listen, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Let's leave it as a package tourist experience." And let or does it, do you feel like in order for it to be regenerative tourism, which is the ding-dinged word at every conference you go to nowadays, in order for that to happen, we do need to engage our local population so they can feel ownership and a living partnership with downtown.
I think as tourism evolves, and hopefully it is a thing that evolves, where the people who travel to different countries, they don't only travel just for the resort experience or to just have this thing and to do a few activities. I think tourism is a people's business as well, I believe. And I feel like you have to interact with individuals no matter what country you go for. That's how you learn. That's how you grow.
It has to benefit quality of life.
It has to empathize. And I think we need to get to that point, especially to connect these new generations of both tourists and both locals to come together and have a blended experience.
So I have a text here, and the text says, "Great show as usual. Downtown don't have a nightlife. Mm-hmm. Everything closes at 5 p.m. Right. What do you say to that?
And one of the things I was listening to, like because you told me don't come here with any foreign models. So I was listening to all the Caribbean tourist conferences that I could find on Zoom because there's been a lot since 2019. As I think there was over 26 million Caribbean tourists. I know, please don't text and say the Bahamas is not the Caribbean. You know what I mean. Our neighborhood tourism. And so the fact that we had in 2019, was it about 7 million?
Yeah, we had 7 million. We come back to
so
7 million.
So we had a good chunk of that piece of the pie. But when they're talking, oh my gosh, I've lost my train of thought.
I know we're like ranked number 3 in terms of the tourist visitation in the Caribbean region. It's Cuba, it's Dominican Republic, and Jamaica, and then come us for 4th place.
Right.
Yeah. So, but as we continue to talk about how do we reclaim these tourists, and one of the things you said, you think it's a people's business. Is this something, do we wait to be told by the people who are coming here? Because again, in The Guardian, it says Grand Bahama needs to do better. We need to create things for our tourists to do. Or do we say, listen, we are going to claim our destiny. We're going to create something we want to give you, and you're going to buy into it because we're going to do it well.
Of course.
How do we claim that? How do we curate the experience that's coming? As somewhere like Grand Bahama, which is basically, I mean, it's had a tourist model, it's lifeblood for many years in a certain extent, but it has a big open space for new ideas. How do we begin that mission?
I think it starts with like what we tell people who are even interested in coming here in the first place. When people think about coming to the Bahamas, especially if you're in the U.S., where you're coming through flight or boat, at some point, they're going to get a notification of, A, have a good time, but be careful because you can't go to this area at this particular point because it's unsafe or the crime is high or whatever. And again, these things are realities. They do happen. Not necessarily saying our crime is super high compared to a lot of different places. But as an individual coming to a foreign country, you're already on high alert. So you already have these guards up for the experiences that you you want to have or thinking you only have, it limits your opportunity in terms of really experiencing a lot of different things, because you have to be, you're almost like, oh, I don't want to, I got to be careful. I got to be on my P's and Q's. If this Bahamian person comes up to me randomly and tries to, you know,
but do you feel like we've earned that reputation? Does that come well deserved? Do you think that's unfair?
You mean in terms of crime and stuff?
Yeah,
like that?
As far as the warning that's get issued across the you know, the ambassadorial websites, et cetera, is this fair?
Question.
Or is this something that we are being unfairly?
Are you terrified of living in the Bahamas? That's the response. If you're terrified, it's fair. If you're not terrified, then it's unfair.
Ooh, so that's so I'll hawk on that for a second and hopefully that'll answer your question. I had this thought a couple years ago in terms of, I feel, and this is sad, this is probably going to sound sad as it comes to my mouth, I feel more free to explore in a different country, mm-hmm. in terms of like, oh, I'm up for whatever, than to explore at home, because of probably hearing for years that it's dangerous after this point in time, or don't go in this area to do particular things, or, you know, just get home or be off road because of the other things that may happen, like a shooting might happen on somewhere in the West, but I'm in the East, but that still impacts, okay, like I got to be careful going up because everything happens in the West or something like that. So to hopefully come back to answer your question, is it fair that we have that mark on it? No, I don't think it is fair, but it's real. And it's something that we have to navigate and we have to figure out how to make truly safe spaces, or at least spaces that we feel safe for these activities to kick off and happen.
I have a question for you, Catherine, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My text has said there's a strip club someplace downtown.
Oh, yeah. I'm well acquainted with that. I can tell you why.
Absolutely. And the reason why he brought it up, right? Yeah. He's saying that there's a new culture, a new theme of Bay Street, right? That is thriving, right? And what we are trying to put forward is no longer what the Bahamian people want, because the strip club apparently fits nicely there, right? And the people like it there. And the idea that what you're trying to push forward will not mesh with this new concept of what they see Bay Street as.
Well, I actually really appreciate that text. First of all, I know all about the strip clubs on Bay Street. One that used to be the Cheetah's Lounge, it's no longer. It's been rebranded or recalled that. But when I was in labor at 1 a.m., it was a Sunday night. I went into labor at 12 midnight at 1 o'clock. I mean, this baby was a Hollywood movie baby. Like, the doctor almost didn't make it. I told him he couldn't charge me for his photo finish arrival. But we got stuck in traffic at 1 o'clock Sunday night. So I guess it was Monday morning outside the Cheetah's Lounge. It was full of people. It was thriving. And I, like, you know, in full, like, in dramatic glory, rolled down the window and cussed everyone and told them that was what's wrong with the country, that everyone's there on a Sunday night spending their money. But it did stick with me that, look, this is a full and thriving business.
Yeah, it's always
they're making a lot of money there. They're giving Dazzle back its name. And so I'm always interested to know, is like, are we, those that are having these conversations, is it what the people want? Is this where we're engaging? Where is their money to be made? So I think there's a lot of truth in that statement, is that this is what is full. And I do have one pitch that came in also by someone who had a different target audience. And it came in from a mom saying, as a mom that travels often with my kids, I would love there to be a safe public play space like in the Junkanoo Beach area,
right,
which I have to say they did a good job with Christmas with the lights.
Yes.
They made it a walkthrough experience. I think it could be
very
developed
good.
More, but it was something that if you took your kids and went and did, it was a pleasant walk. But she said, well, why? And I think this has been pitched before. You would know. Why can't we put like a permanent carnival-esque thing there in which you pay $3 and you go in and you can do slides, you can do, you know, have somewhere safe for your kids to play. If you came off a cruise ship, you want to buy ice cream and sit there. You have an activity that there's plenty of room for it, and that we are making the money rather than something that comes in annually and takes the money with it when it goes. I know that Bahamians do benefit from the carnival, but this is going to be something that is always there. And if you travel with kids and you go to a city, you're looking for a public, safe play space that you can go and just sit and chill for a minute.
Another question to you, Catherine. Mm-hmm. Some weeks ago when we started this project of analyzing Bay Street, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did some research, investigating and speaking to some businesses downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you this, right? East of East Street is deserted.
Mm-hmm.
from your interviews and interacting for those persons who own those areas, those buildings that has been dilapidated and has been abandoned or just shuttered for whatever reason,
right,
what is the reason they're saying that east of East Street is closed?
Actually, I was not afraid that you would ask me that, but I think it's one of those unanswerable questions that if anyone wants to call in and enlighten us, but it's always felt like it's a ghost town. I feel like people have said, I was doing an interview, and please don't take this personally, but take it personally. People said things like cursed, hopeless, deserted, dilapidated, language. That there's zero parking, so there's zero hope for there to be development, because if you start businesses there, that there's nowhere for people to go, to be, to access them. But Travis, actually, we had discussed this before he came on, and he did have some thoughts on the subject of the abandoned buildings.
Right.
Weren't you talking about the fact that there are places where you have to have mandatory occupation, and
yeah,
and how we could encourage these buildings to be opened up? If you're saying if you can't afford, basically you need to take a hard line and you have to own it, open it, resurface it, or allow someone else to do so. And that there's ways that they've done in other cities around the world where they've partnered with art galleries to re-canvas buildings that might be nothing else but that. Or that they've had people that, you know, subsidize small businesses to say, if you take over the space, you can be VAT-free or tax-free or something exempt for a couple of years, rather than just giving them to those exemptions to the bigger businesses. But Travis, you had ideas on that.
You said all the ideas that I had, like give small businesses incentive to use the buildings or to use the area, which helps everybody. So like, yes, you may own this building and you don't want to do with this and this is taking up space. I would encourage you, that's even before that. So this invisible ghost that we always fight in terms of who owns the business, why can't we do this? We need to unmask that. There's so much vagueness around, oh, you can't do this because it's always been this way. We need to have a little bit more transparency in terms of who owns what, who we could approach. Because more than likely, it might even be some individuals who own those businesses that would love a proposal to come to their front desk.
So you're saying that we need to identify who owned these buildings at this present time?
On that, and we need to at least bring more clarity to what the process is in terms of reaching out or to work with spaces like that.
And Travis, what if I tell you this?
Right, go ahead.
And I was on a beach, Catherine, at the same time.
Right.
What if I tell you this, that the persons who own east of East Street has a business plan and a business model now that they're ready to go at now? They say, hey, if the government give me permission, I'll do this tomorrow.
Right.
However, the government saying, what if I tell you the government saying, what you propose, we don't want you to do. Right. We want you to do what we propose. Perhaps, what if I tell you that is why there's a stalemate? The owners has an idea, the government has an idea, and the culturalist has an idea, and we are at a stalemate, an impact, where nothing is being done because the people say, I own this.
Right.
How can you tell me what to do with my building? Right. Why do I have to rent to this person when I want to use my building now?
Yeah. So what I would say to all parties involved, whoever it might be, fair or unfair on, get it together, man. Like, let's work together. Like, and that's easier said than done. And I recognize that. But at least operated in life, feel like there's a solution. There is a solution that people could come across where it could benefit everyone. That might be rosy and fairy eyes and
cherries
and stuff like that, and toxic
Travis.
Positivity and stuff like that. But no one wins if we stay in the stalemate. No one wins.
But
no
I think
one.
Is, and I appreciate your positivity, Travis, because I think as we go, and one of the themes on the whole station, I think, is the road to 50. And I think that there's people that approach it with chronic negativity or, you know, a refusal to not see what is best and brightest in the Bahamas. And,
right,
and that if we claim and have national pride in what we own, that's where we are empowered and find a foot forward. So I appreciate that about you, Travis. My questions would be on that is why? I mean, is it because what is proposed is not Bahamian branded, that it only benefits a limited amount of people, it is somehow not partnering as they would see fit? The government has a different vision in mind. I mean, what is it about? I need more information. What is it about the visions that are in Congress?
And perhaps that's the conversation we need to have to find out what is the disagreement.
Yeah.
Why are they not building? It can't be because, I don't see it profitable. Because these are some of the wealthiest people in the Bahamas with spare money. They can invest. They have businesses, and the businesses are thriving. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they don't have the money. It's just that something is stopping them from investing in what they want.
Yeah. I mean, and most cities in the world, especially the ones that have their face forward to the tourist industry, there's a responsibility of place. Like, there are mandates that say you have to keep your property in a certain manner, and if not, there will be fees, there'll be penalties, and I guess worst comes to worst, there could be reclamation. That if you have you're not going to have in downtown, I'm scared of the city to name because you'll say don't be talking about these places, but in a major city that is geared towards tourism, you're not allowed to have a derelict place in the middle of
it. Humor to is government owned but 3 or 4 derelict buildings on the Bay Street too. How do you enforce a law to other people
and you are maybe they the need law. To be knocked down to make parking so we can access Bay Street.
Or to that point, if government owns it, why if government owns it and government is the same entity that cares about small and recognizes the value of small, medium sized businesses, why not put those two things together in terms of, okay, if you want to do this business, or if it's a big enough building where you could have multiple businesses in it, because I've seen models like that as well too, like Armature Works, where they have like a bunch of different food vendors in one building, and they share resources like water and
the co-ops.
Co-ops and stuff like that.
Right next to the Indian restaurant on
Taj Mahal.
Right next to it, there's either Rodney or Clarence Bean building. Yes. And I'm not sure which Bean. I know it's definitely a Bean building there. That's owned by government.
Right.
We know how it looks, right?
Yep.
And see, my point is,
it's a park out there all the time for dart nights.
It's an example of why Bay Street looks like how it looks, because the people who own Bay Street looking at government say, but you're guilty of the same thing. You can't be telling me what to do. So but I want to read this text, and I also want to bait Catherine.
Mm.
The persons who own east of Bay Street wants to build high-rise condominiums.
Right.
They want to make it residential.
No.
This is not necessarily tourism-based. They say, man, there's built this business or commerce in building apartments for people of my ilk, their kind, to come and live.
Mm.
And then there are people saying, but we was fighting for access for Bay Street for years, of a generation. I can't have you make a gated community.
Not a gated community.
Mind you, if it's a high rise and you have parking and you have people who do valet parking, you call it gated community, right?
I guess.
I can't have you create a... Mind you, could look nice, just like Collins Avenue of Flagler Street in Miami. Miami Beach.
I know what you mean.
Right?
Yeah.
This is where they're looking. They said they see it. It can be done. Mm. They have the clientele. They have persons who... They can make Bay Street look pretty overnight. But... People have said, but I want something cultural and smaller for the over-the-hill people. And these people said, but how can you push over-the-hill people in my building? Let me read this text and then you respond to that, Catherine. Mm. Good morning. Love the discussion. And Catherine is on point with creating a permanent family activity space for the Bay Street area.
Buff.
Go ahead, Catherine.
That's the one other mother with children who traipses around the world with them. Thank you so much. And I appreciate that. One of the things is, so when the Point was built, wasn't there a repeal or a review of the height restrictions on Bay Street?
Like 10 feet or something like that, right?
I'm just asking, I'm phoning a friend out here.
Or 10 stories,
because I remember, and I think that the Point, I feel like hit a lot of people with a little bit of a shock. Like when we were talking about it, it was a done deal. I mean, last time we were talking about the developments of, you know, Royal Caribbean's Island, et cetera. I'm like, is this a done deal? Are we talking about something that's already been signed, sealed, and delivered? And so that was already done and the high rises were there. One of the conversations when it comes about, like, do we want to be penned in? Do we want to block off what is behind the coast roads? Do we really want to, barrier in what the over-the-hill communities, so they can't breathe? And then the other hand is saying, well, if you keep saying you want to be like Singapore, if you go somewhere like Singapore, they're a nation of high rises on a small island. And so you have to allow this kind of global infrastructure and change to come in order for this to happen. What do you, Travis, I have feelings, but what are your thoughts?
Oh, boy. I don't see infrastructure as a big component of that, like I always say, the big three is parking, walking, and transportation. I think those will allow for circulations. When you come to high rises, I think we definitely have a lot of space to have experiences more than the second floor, the third floor, the fifth floor. Not only for shops, but again, for living as well, too. I'm not opposed to that living. I mean, like that, because it's almost like a South Carolina, Charleston type
of vibe. But how will I see the ocean? The ocean's not for me.
Good question. That's another thing. Oh, man. And for those who blocked out Cabbage Beach on the weekends, shame on you.
Mm.
But You need access
to the beach. You know, Cabot
Beach is private.
Yeah.
It's the beach itself right. that is public.
Okay,
but access
if
you, to it is
yeah,
private.
But if we use that as a model, you still could get, I mean, ideally in a perfect world, you could get access to that. You still have access to the beach, but it is respected and recognized as a multi-use space where tourists are there. It might, you know, people could connect and people could do what they... people could coexist, whether you're tourists or local. And yes, you should still have access to the beach, but there's still a lot of room and space for individuals to either do residential or commercial where the lines don't have to be separated, I feel like. I don't feel like they don't have to be strict boundaries. I think it's because we think that we need to have strict boundaries is where people think, oh, this thing is not possible or this thing cannot be done.
So let me ask you this, right? The Hotel Corona. The Hotel Corona that's on Bay Street, the big hotel there, is being
by where again?
Across the road from Pedal Pushes. I'm right.
Yes.
The big hotel. It's a big hotel. It's abandoned. I should tell you, young, because you don't know what the Hotel Corona is, right? It's a big hotel.
But he does know what Cabbage Beach is. Yeah. So not that young.
So there's a big hotel abandoned, right, in the center of East Bay Street,
right?
And the question to you, Catherine and Travis, is. What should government do for to have a place like that so huge in the middle of Bay Street to encourage it to open, to force it to open, to force the developers or owners to say, man, no, this can't stay like this.
Mm.
What influence, what laws, should there be laws to say, well, if you don't do anything about this Hotel Corona, we taking it. We can take it and sell it.
And that's
telling the Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, and you say laws, everybody be like, yeah, you should do that. And I don't think that's necessarily 100% fair as well, too, because it is the individual's property. It's just a shame that they don't want to do anything with it. But I don't also think you should force people to figure out what to do with that property. I feel like we should come to a mutual beneficial ground, a proposal for where I get something out of this and then either... either might be revenue or the country gets something out of this from having a shared experience where you have more bodies to do things. Because if it's like a hotel, especially if you are talking about the tourism product from those individuals flying in, the longer people stay here or feel like they could stay here in those infrastructures, the more money that they spend, the more activity that they do, the more bonding overall for everybody as well, too. So it is in the country's benefit that we do stuff like that. But my hope is that both parties involved, whether the owner of the building and the government could find middle ground where you could see the benefit for both.
Well, I would say that in potential disagreement, I think that a lot of, again, public spaces, main drags have, if you go to any like little suburban community, there's HOAs. You have to keep your house in a certain way. You're not allowed to just have your yard looking any kind of way. You can't just leave junk all over the place. You agree to be part of a community, so there's a value of a quality of life for everyone involved. And so I think from perhaps that main tourist strip of Bay Street, it should be said, we'd like to ask that everyone partner with us, and there could be consequences or fees attached to not having a positive outlook or partnership, or again saying if you can't afford to do so, can we farm this out to one of our local artists and maybe give the artists pay them to mural it out
already, though, that we need to partner.
I think there's the, again, when someone says these are ideas we've heard, I feel that too, because I feel like I've heard these ideas too, and there's a bit of a pulling a sore muscle to talk about this over and over again. I kind of have a visceral reaction to the idea of being skyscraped and penned in. Again, when we were talking about, potential cruise ship developments of other islands, the idea is like, we can't own this. We can't use this as a public park. We can't use, like, what is it? How many people in the inner city? Someone told me the number, 150,000, but I think it's got to be more. But half a mile away that have no access necessarily to public spaces. Cabbage Beach, you said, is private. But we can't claim that area that is being looking to be developed for our Bahamian people. We can't claim Junkanoo Beach a little bit for our Bahamian people, because the more we pen ourselves in, the more our quality of life decreases, the less ownership we have. It goes to a culture of discontent that we see across the board. It affects all things. It makes us upset about immigration, about our poverty, about our taxes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. What about the old buildings? A number of these buildings are protected. And the
protected owners, historically?
Historically,
yeah.
Because they're over 100 years old.
The
owners of the buildings, right, saying that, man, the type of money I got to spend to renovate this, I could bulldoze that and build a whole new state-of-the-art building. I don't have to worry about pipes and functioning, especially when there's no parking. Right? Is this something that the government need to consider? So I understand these buildings are 200, nearly 300 years old, but the idea of redeveloping downtown, I may have to yield.
Yes.
And bulldoze one of these 300-year-old. See, I'm being facetious now. I see y'all saying, you can't bulldoze
those 300. If we don't invest in our culture, in our art, in our music, in our beauty, in our history, then we're giving away the wealth that is the Bahama land.
And the music is playing, and let me read this text as we go on break, right? Great show. We need to start setting up activities we like to do and not what the tourists like. Tourists want to experience us being ourselves and what we do, not tailor a package for them. We are turning into a cruise ship. And that's what we're saying. We become creating a tourist trap. And I'm concerned that the port itself is a tourist trap where...
We want to be a tourist treasure.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah. Where there's activities for the tourists and there's not necessarily any activities for Bahamians to partake in. But anyway, this is Guardian Radio AM, and I'm here with Travis, and I'm here with Catherine, and we're talking Bay Street and redevelopment and hashing out, like, what's wrong? Well, why these things aren't happening? What ideas can we give the government? But we'll be right back.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I'm having a discussion with Catherine Chisnell, say I pronounce your last name, Mitchell, right?
Excellent.
Who is my resident guest host. And of course, I have Travis. Travis, I don't know your last name.
Miller.
Travis Miller. Yeah. Travis Miller actually does pitches where young person come and pitch ideas about businesses, and you try finding financing and things like that for them to open up their businesses, right? And of course, we brought him here so we can pitch some ideas on what we can do for Bay Street.
Right.
Can we analyze what is wrong, why Bay Street is not opening up for young people to do these development? We are still patching in the port, the cruise port also. I'm wondering, is it going to be a tourist trap or is it going to be something interactive where Bahamians can come and celebrate and the tourists come to celebrate us? So we have all of that in the mix as we have the conversation about that. As we think about how we redevelop Bay Street for us, firstly, and then secondly, for the tourists.
Right.
Right? So that's the conversation we're having.
Yes, right. One of the things that really struck me last show was someone called and said that, you know, we don't have any ideas, basically. Let's just be quiet and enjoy the ride of all this foreign investment coming in, of all the people who want to carry us. And Travis came up upon my heart because I'm like, no, I rebuke that from the depths of my soul. I think that we're replete with ideas. And I hear the frustrations of people saying, you're talking it again, nothing's happening, nothing's coming through. So where do we give these ideas to? How do these ideas get called upon? I mean, when I went to one or two of Travis's pitch meetings, and you have young Bahamian after young Bahamian coming with enthusiasm, with passion, with drive, and where do they go to help contribute to the growth of this nation? And today we're talking in particular to the regeneration of Bay Street.
Yeah.
Oh, I have another text here, right? Mm. And this text made me smile, right? Because it challenges the government. And this is how the text goes there. And I want you to respond to this quickly. When does the government plan to improve the infrastructure of East Street? Right? You want owners to invest into an area that is a major flood zone. You know Bay Street is flood, right?
Oh, wow, that is.
And this is coming from the estate of Sir Arlington G. Butler. They are vested. They are concerned if they invest their money, they can get washed away.
That was good. That's
so
a good
so one. When you hear government saying, no, it is them. It's the owners of Bay Street, and they don't want to participate and join us and us redeveloping Bay Street. And then the owners of these parts are saying, man, but we want to invest, but it could be a bad investment.
Yeah.
You know, you ever go to some of the shops when it rains, the water flows into the shop. And they're putting sandbags inside there. Have you seen tourists rolling up their pants and walking to knee deep water on Bay Street?
It's the wheelchair tourists that always catch my eye when you see them the struggle to access spots. Yeah.
And going to Castro mentioned wheelchair, and you know that the sidewalks are not working. And you say, man, government, I understand that you want to challenge us, right?
Right.
But you're not participating or pulling your weight.
No.
Right.
You got to clean to lead.
Yeah. But so. In my mind, it's a question of, it's a statement of, okay, the issue with the flooding downtown, that should have been a decision that should have happened years ago. So you don't even come to it. When it doesn't rain, you don't think about it, right? It's like, okay, you just could move downtown. But when crazy rain hits, there's a whole flood, and then you just think about, oh, what is it? Like, but this is a decision that should have been made years ago. Now that we're here now, I say it's better to get started and then see where it goes. At least let's get people working on it or thinking about it. What's going on with the Village Road paving right now, which is almost done, by the way, and everybody's super happy about that. That's good. Yes, it was a difficult thing to go through as it was going on. It took longer than expected, but now everybody will benefit on because we made that decision to do that. I think there's probably a lot of micro decisions that we need to do from an infrastructure perspective that we just need to get started on now and be transparent about what the difficulties and challenges are and why things are taking longer or short or whatever that they need to, and then just actively continue to work on that as a government.
Watch me bait Catherine.
Yeah.
Catherine, when the port opened and it's spectacular, and all the shops are opening and the money and wealth and tourists are pumping through, and you say, okay, this is working. This is good. This was a good investment. The managers are doing a good job. The restaurants are open and commerce is well and done. What happens to Bay Street proper?
You know, one of the things that someone texted me through is that when you're a cruiser, because we got a lot of Bahamians that cruise themselves, is that one of the things you do is get out of the port town. Nobody says go and stay in the port. There's very few ports, maybe a few European jewels, that you're like, get there, get a taxi, get out. And what we've tried to say, what I guess this is trying to create in Bay Street, is that, no, stay here, spend money here, don't, you know, this is where we can find and entertain you and show you that which is the heart of us. I would hope that ideally, best case scenario, because it's occurring, that it would only enrich and enliven the heart of Bay Street. And so then when people say there's nothing to do, there's nowhere to go, so we have to give away a piece of our prized land so that 5,000 to 7,000 tourists a day can be hosted by a cruise line there, we can say, no, we've got it. We'll make money off of it. What I'd like to see is Bahamian businesses that are have a certain quality of work demanded from them, that the products must be made in the Bahamas, that the entertainers must be Bahamian, that I'm not saying we can't ever host other people here, that a certain standard and quality of product is asked for, and so that people get used to it, get used to paying for it, and look forward to it, so they know when they're coming there's something to be offered.
Yeah, key is get used to it. Like, you have to put it in muscle memory that this is a thing that happens.
I enjoy this conversation. Yeah. We got to continue this again, right? Because we need to have ideas on what can we do to redevelop Bay Street. But the hour has come to an end. This has been Guardian Radio AM. Thank you very much, Catherine. Thank you very much, Travis.
And thank you all to those who have toured Village Road. I know you've worked hard, and as a QC parent, I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Shout out to that crew for sure.
Good. Yeah. Everybody celebrating about Village Road being paved and forgot about the heartaches. Anyway, Guardian Radio AM, we'll see you in there. Have a wonderful day.